Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, October 31st, 2025. Happy Halloween. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Entertainment Decatur, Dancing into the Holidays. National Ballet Troupe's Nutcracker Show, set for November 2nd. After the trick-or-treaters have gone home and the porch lights are off, it's time to start the holidays. Kirkland Fine Arts Center will be opening the Christmas season as the first stop on the national tour of the Nutcracker, Magical Christmas Ballet Tour on Sunday, September 2nd at the Millikan University venue. It's all about kicking off the holidays for us at the top of November every year, said Dan Talmy, producer of the National Ballet Company. The East Coast troupe arrived in Decatur a week before its first show. The West Coast troupe will start its tour simultaneously. Rehearsals and setting up the tour is important for the cast, Talmy said, especially before the first show. It's about getting the dancers in a groove, getting the show together on a technical level, he said. Everybody gets in sync before you take it to the next show and on down the road. Millikan has also been hospitable, the producer said. There's all kinds of components, Talmy said, and they really have an active team here. The cast is made up of dancers from across the globe, including Ukraine, Italy, Japan, Kazakhstan. The four corners are represented, Talmy said. Thales Poncine came from France to perform, I mispronounced that, I'm sure, perform the classic holiday ballet. I did the tour last year as a dancer, she said. I love doing the tour. It's a really good experience, and it's exciting to travel. Poncine said she especially loves the Kirkland Theater. The stage is huge, she said, so we're going to have all the decor. The dancers have been limited on stage space in other venues, Poncine said. The stage is smaller, so we don't have all the set, and don't have the space to dance. Working with local child dancers brings a community aspect to the performance, Talmy said. The local and international dancers will meet for the first time on the day of the show. Before, with the performance, the children will have their hair and makeup finished by professionals. They'll get full star treatment, Talmy said. Then they get queued up for their moments under the lights. More than 30 young dancers from the Vandalia Performing Arts and the Decatur Park District's Cultural Arts Program will be on stage with the professional dancers. The children auditioned through the direction of Poncine. She traveled throughout the country for 2 months, hosting two-day auditions. Sometimes there were like just 20 kids. Then sometimes there were 130, she said. This is a really great experience for them. The National Ballet Companies will be visiting 94 cities during the tours. The last shows will be on December 31st. Although the cast of professionals have danced on several stages, this year's Nutcracker performance will have new choreography, Talmy said. There's always new elements that are added every year to keep it fresh, he said. Some of the dancers are visiting the United States for the first time, giving them new experiences. They see this picturesque American landscape with corn silos and rows in the fields, Talmy said. These are moments when you realize this is new for some of these folks. According to Brian Diver, the director of Kirkland Fine Arts, the ballet has stopped by Decatur 6 times in 19 years. The venue's beautiful stage and supportive community make it the perfect place to bring this beloved tradition to life before it is shared with audiences across the country, he said. Talmy's production adds a unique twist to the popular holiday ballet. According to the producer, the second act takes place in the land of peace and harmony. In our adaptation, it's a manifestation of countries coming together, people coming together, communities coming together, in harmony in a way that is a model for our world, he said. It's something that we would all like to see. And if you go, it's the Nutcracker Magical Christmas Ballet. It's at 4 p.m. Sunday, November 2nd, this Sunday. It's at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center of Millikan University. Tickets are $25 to $81. Online, call 217-424-6318 or visit the box office at 1215 West Kirkland Drive, Decatur. Again, tickets are $23.25 to $81 online. You can get them online, or you can call 217-424-6318 or visit the box office at 1215 West Kirkland Drive, Decatur. On the web, check out nutcracker.com. And the photo here on page A5 shows the Nutcracker Magical Ballet will start a national tour at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur on Sunday, November 2nd. And there's a photo of a ballerina rehearsing and has a rehearsal skirt on that is twirling, and her arms are up and out. And on the front page, the photos show Meba Kayoko, excuse me, rehearses on for the November 2nd performance of the Nutcracker Magical Christmas Ballet at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur on Wednesday. This is the rehearsal, as they were rehearsing on Wednesday, October 29th. And it's several dancers in the picture, but I guess the one in red is Meba Kayoko. And there are several. They're in ballet poses as they dance. And the smaller photo on the front page shows Rosalba Rita Mattarelli rehearsing for the November 2nd performance of the Nutcracker Magical Christmas Ballet at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur. And this was also on Wednesday, October 29th. And there's at least five dancers here in the photo, but the forefront is Rosalba Rita Mattarelli in rehearsal clothes, not costumes. Courts, indicator, experts to clash in Slover hearing. Defense seeks probe of new DNA samples in 1996 murder case. The stage is now set for a clash of scientific experts in the battle to overturn the verdicts in a 29-year-old notorious Decatur murder case involving a family of convicted killers. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Rodney Forbes on Thursday scheduled a hearing for January 22nd in the defense effort to have new DNA samples probed in the 1996 slaying and dismemberment of 23-year-old Karen Hearn Slover. The DNA is a crucial part of evidence, defense attorneys believe, could reveal the identity of the real killer. The defense claims that the victim's ex-husband, Michael Slover Jr., and his late parents, Michael Slover Sr. and Jeanette Slover, were wrongly convicted of conspiring together to murder Hearn Slover. The defense and prosecution experts are set to fight it out on several fronts. The prosecution says the new DNA is hopelessly contaminated and worthless after claiming the chain of custody in the case was broken. Former Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott, who came out of retirement to refight the case in the Illinois Attorney General's office, also battling to stop the new DNA being run through a national crime database. They say the evidence doesn't meet law enforcement standards, and they further claim that any attempt to use it in the database overseen by the FBI could result in The state police, which controls access to the database in Illinois and has refused to accept the new DNA, being sanctioned and shut out of the system. Forbes is now faced with having to decide the issue of whether the DNA is good enough and whether it can be run through the database to see if there is a match. Both sides in the case have already filed copious legal motions, making their arguments, and Forbes has wondered aloud at Thursday's hearing if he could adjudicate the issue based on that written testimony. But he agreed to hear from expert witnesses after Tara Thompson, a lawyer for the Exoneration Project representing Michael Slover, argued that was the best way to deal with the factual issues involved. The Exoneration Project and the Illinois Innocence Project, another group representing the defendants, claim DNA extracted from bloody fingerprints and other sources point to the real killer or killers of Hearn Slover. And as a consequence, it shows the Slovers are innocent. This court should now allow Mr. Michael Slover Jr. the additional DNA analysis he seeks, analysis that has the capability of identifying whose profiles are on evidence that points to the real perpetrators in the case, said Thompson in her most recent court filing. The prosecution, meanwhile, insists the jury that convicted the son and his parents got the verdicts right the first time, and the defendants richly deserved the 60-year prison sentences they received as punishment. The jurors had been told the defendants wanted the victim dead to stop her moving out of state and taking their son and grandson with her. Michael Slover Jr. remains the defense's only surviving client after his 75-year-old father and his mother, age 77, both died in prison. Their son, age 55, was paroled on March 2024, and he's scheduled to be discharged from parole in March of 2027. Also on the front page, Sangamon County, ex-deputy guilty of second-degree murder. This is from Peoria. An Illinois jury on Wednesday convicted a former sheriff's deputy of second-degree murder in the shooting death of Sonia Massey, a black woman who called 911 asking for help. The jurors, though, did not convict Sean Grayson on the first-degree murder charge that prosecutors sought and that carries a prison sentence of 45 years to life. The 31-year-old Grayson instead could be sentenced to up to 20 years in prison or probation. Sentencing is scheduled for January 29th. Grayson and another deputy arrived at Massey's home in Springfield early on the morning of July 6th, 2024, after she reported a prowler. Grayson shot the 36-year-old woman after confronting her about how she was handling a pot of hot water she had removed from her stove. Grayson and his attorneys argued that he feared Massey would scald him with the hot water. Massey's killing raised new questions about U.S. law enforcement shootings of black people in their homes and prompted a change in Illinois law requiring fuller transparency on the background of candidates for law enforcement jobs. Grayson originally was charged with first-degree murder, but after the 7-day trial, the jury was given the option of considering second-degree murder, which applies when a defendant faces a serious provocation or believes their action is justified, even if that belief is unreasonable. He could be sentenced from 4 to 20 years, a sentence that could be halved if he behaves behind bars. He could also be sentenced to probation and avoid prison time entirely. Body camera video recorded by the other Sangamon County Sheriff's deputy on the scene that morning, Dawson Farley, was a key part of the prosecution's case. It showed Massey, who struggled with mental health issues, telling the officers, "Don't hurt me," and repeating, "Please, God." When the deputies entered the house, Grayson saw the pot on the stove and ordered Massey to move it. Massey jumped up to retrieve the pot, and she and Grayson joked about how he said he was backing off from the hot, steaming water. Massey then replied, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. Both Grayson and Farley drew their pistols and yelled at Massey to put the pot down. Grayson told investigators he thought her rebuke meant she intended to kill him. And in the following commotion, fired 3 shots, striking Massey just below the eye. Farley, who at the time of the shooting was a probationary employee subject to firing for any reason, testified that Massey didn't say or do anything that caused him to view her as a threat. But under cross-examination, he acknowledged that he initially reported to investigators that he feared for his safety because of the hot water. Farley did not fire his weapon and was not charged. Grayson testified in his own defense that the first witness his attorneys called, and was the first witness his attorneys called. He told jurors he noticed the bottom of the pot was red, and he believed Massey planned to throw the water at him. He said Massey's words felt like a threat, and that he drew his gun because officers are trained to use force to get compliance. "She's done. You can go get it. But that's a headshot," Grayson told Farley after the shooting. "There's nothing you can do, man." Grayson relented moments later and went to get his kit while Farley found dish towels to apply pressure to the head wound. When Grayson returned, Farley told him his help wasn't necessary, so he threw his kit on the floor and said, "I'm not even going to waste my med stuff then." Prosecutors said that response indicated Grayson's disregard for public safety, an argument that persuaded Judge Ryan Cadigan to keep Grayson in jail awaiting trial. An Illinois appellate court subsequently ruled that Grayson should be released under the Pretrial Fairness Act. An appeal to the state Supreme Court has yet to be decided. Massey's death also forced the early retirement of the sheriff who hired Grayson and generated a U.S. Justice Department inquiry. The federal probe was resolved with Sangamon County Sheriff's Department's agreement to fortify training, particularly de-escalation practices, develop a program in which mental health professionals can respond to emergency calls, and to generate data on use of force incidents. Massey's family, with the assistance of civil rights attorney Ben Crump, settled a lawsuit against the county for $10 million, and state lawmakers changed Illinois law to require fuller transparency on the background of candidates for law enforcement jobs. And the photos here on page A2 are headshots of both Massey in a graduation cap, smiling, and Grayson, another headshot of him. And then an inset photo, State Senator Doris Turner, Democrat of Springfield, speaks to reporters while family members of Sonia Massey comfort one another in Springfield on Monday, July 22nd, 2024. In more local news on page A3, man charged with meth dealing. Police report that a self-confessed drug dealer, already on probation after being convicted of methamphetamine possession, soon returned to his old habits. The 33-year-old defendant was arrested in the early hours of October 27th after pulling into a Decatur motel parking lot in a U-Haul van. Inside the vehicle was more than 17 grams of meth, a digital scale, and multiple rolls of plastic bags, according to a sworn affidavit filed by the Macon County Sheriff's Office. Macon County Circuit Court records show the Decatur man was sentenced to 18 months probation March 17th after pleading guilty to the use of drug possession charge. He had also been ordered to undergo a substance abuse evaluation and complete treatment within 12 months. Questioned by deputies after his latest arrest, the defendant is quoted as telling them he purchases methamphetamine in 1/2 to full ounce quantities and has been selling methamphetamine for the past 2 years to support his drug habit, the affidavit said. The judge denied the man pretrial release, and he is due back in court for a preliminary hearing November 12th, when he will enter a plea to the new charge, accusing him of dealing meth. Police: driver hit squad car. This is from Arcola. An Illinois State Police squad car was hit Thursday morning on Interstate 57 in Douglas County as the trooper was conducting traffic control for a previous crash. State police said in a news release that the crash occurred at 5:50 a.m. when a squad car was parked across the northbound lanes of I-74 north of Arcola, conducting traffic control for a previous crash involving a commercial motor vehicle. The trooper had activated the emergency lights in the squad car, directing traffic to exit at milepost 203 onto Illinois 133. The release said a Chevrolet Trailblazer failed to move over, failed to exit, and struck the front passenger side of the trooper's squad car. The trooper was outside of the squad car at the time of the crash and reported no injuries. The driver of the Chevrolet, 68-year-old Donald E. Moorcraft of Robinson, Illinois, was ticketed with failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident and a Scots Law move-over law violation. State police said there have been 12 move-over law-related crashes this year. State police report the roadway was reopened to traffic shortly after 9 a.m. In Naperville, Illinois, kids go nuts in Halloween arcade. Claw machine birthday gift garage turned into holiday operation. Duke Martin had his eye on the prize, a can of tuna buried in a sea of ramen packets. The 10-year-old, dressed in a Scream costume, steadily maneuvered the device. Moments earlier, another kid had nabbed the tuna, and Duke wanted to achieve the same accomplishment, which would add his photo to the slideshow of winners and give him bragging rights, of course. "I got it," Duke yelled, as the adults in the room turned to look at him. He held the can of tuna over his head. Without hesitation, his photo was taken to be added to the photo gallery. "People don't usually win the tuna that fast," Patrick Mueller said. For 4 years, Mueller has been running a Halloween-themed arcade out of his home at 2129 Countryside Circle in Naperville. What started as a birthday gift for his eldest daughter's 7th birthday has turned into a yearly operation known as the Game Over Haunted Arcade. Game Over Haunted Arcade. It's just impressive that they do this, and they do this all for free, and they just open it up, said neighbor Patrick Cunningham, who takes his kids to the arcade. "The claw machine is the favorite," Cunningham said. "I like pinball, but it's usually pretty booked with kids, so most of the time I'm just watching because I don't want to cut in front of the children. But every once in a while, it'll be open and I can get in there and play," he said. The Game Over Haunted Arcade started it in 2021 when Mueller, 45, said he was trying to find a present for his daughter Ainsley, whose birthday was October 16th. "As I was looking to find a gift for her, I found something really unique and fun. And it was the claw machine that's sitting in the garage," he said. The person selling it online said it came from a roller rink that was closing down. "I went over there, I looked at it, and I thought, this is really a fun gift. So I bought it for her," Mueller said. "So technically, that's her claw machine. I wrapped it up and gave it to her, and she was super excited." Ainsley and her friends loved playing with the machine, but Mueller decided he didn't want to stop there. With Halloween around the corner, he saw an opportunity. Instead of passing out candy to trick-or-treaters, why not have kids try to win the candy out of the claw machine? It was a huge hit, Mueller said. The kids were going nuts for it. All the neighborhood kids, once word got started getting around, they were all just coming by to try to win candy. So after that, I thought, well, this would be fun if we had like a couple of arcade games. And then every year it's just grown. Over time, Mueller started opening Over time, he started opening up his garage door, hanging up tarps and lights. He put out more games like pinball and Pac-Man for neighbors to use. A bar originally bought for his basement now sits in his garage, so adults can drink beer as they watch their kids play everything from Rampage to a Simpsons game. Even with all the other games, Mueller said, the claw machine remains a favorite among the children. Typically, it's filled with ramen packets, since most of those are easier to grab than candy, and it takes less ramen to fill the machine. But there's also another item children can usually find in the machine, a can of tuna. I don't know why or how, but I think it was my wife. She just thought it would be funny to put a can of tuna in there, too, since we've got soup in there, Mueller said. What we found was these kids were coming up, and they were really honed in on the tuna. They were going, I want to win the tuna. I want to win the tuna. Last year, Mueller also added a tuna Hall of Fame, where anyone who wins the tuna gets their photo added to a slideshow and displayed for everyone to see. Putting together the arcade is not easy. Mueller jokingly tells his two daughters every year that this year will be the time he hosts the arcade. But seeing how much his children and other people love it, he keeps going. There's people who come here and they say, oh, we've come here every year, and we drive from Algonquin or something. It's crazy, he said. There's a lot of bewilderment from people who are seeing it for the first time as well. So those types of interactions with the community, it's really satisfying. The Game Over Haunted Arcade is open from 4 to 9 p.m. daily through Thursday, through yesterday, and 3 to 10 p.m. today and Saturday when it ends for the season. And it's got a picture of the garage here. It's a big, at least two-car garage with a neon sign outside saying Game Over Haunted Arcade. And there's lights inside, and you can see people at different games sitting on high stools. And there's Halloween decorations inside and a skeleton outside leaning away from the garage. And it says, the Game Over Haunted Arcade at 2129 Countryside Circle in Naperville is packed with visitors, and this was from October 17, 2025. The arcade was started 4 years ago by Patrick Mueller after he bought a claw machine for his eldest daughter's birthday. In more state news, dozen deer illegally hunted. This is from Boulder. Investigators are seeking information regarding 12 dead deer, apparently shot illegally from roads near Carlisle Lake in Clinton County. The deer carcasses were first found in Illinois Conservation Police Friday, October 24th, in fields a short distance from roads in multiple locations in Boulder community near the lake, according to a news release on Monday from Acting Chief Deputy Dennis R. Perez of the Clinton County Sheriff's Office. Law enforcement, he believes that there is more deer that have been shot but have not been located, the release states. A Clinton County Crime Stoppers reward is being offered in the case for information that leads to the arrest and prosecution of anyone involved in the shootings. Anyone with information about this case is asked to call the Sheriff's Office at 618-594-4555, extension 2, or send an email to dennis.perez@clintonco.illinois.gov. clintonco.illinois.gov. And it's 618-594-4555, extension 2. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, October 31st, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.